listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to LA Talk Radio, Your Ultimate Life. Me and my Phoenix have showed up today, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Fun. And you know, you would have never thought that I was going to talk about Legos, but I'm going to, or my guest is. I've got a special guest tonight, Tim Kroll, who is here joining me to lighten up your day and do cool stuff. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for being here. I'm really excited about it.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. So I'm going to start with a question that I often start with.
Okay.
You you just – actually, no, I'm going to start with something else. So you just
I love the spontaneity, though. This just gets me – I'm like giddy with excitement. I can't wait for this. Let's go.
All right, let's roll. So you told me you just got back from a couple trips, and you said one of them was a big Lego conference.
Yeah.
And, you know, the LA Talk – this show is about creating a life of purpose, prosperity, yeah, and joy, and you do a lot of stuff with Legos. So there was a workshop you referred to. And the serious play methodology is a Lego trademark, I guess, which I didn't know. Tell me about this workshop you just did and how you teach people with Legos and whatever methodology to be better, do better, show up more, or whatever it is. I'm not going to pretend to describe it. Go for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of almost have to back up in regards to the journey of my life and the development of things that have happened. And I don't want to go into like, oh, I was born on this day, whatever, you know, but I, like, just to give you a little bit of a background.
Well,
on
we
it.
Only have an hour, so, you know.
I know. So the reality is, in my heart, I've always been a teacher. I love being able to teach and watch that aha moment or that light come on in somebody's eyes when they get it. And so throughout my entire life, I actually went to college to be able to help and work with youth group, with youth kids. And I've always had that pattern. I mean, I'm over 50 now, and I've been doing that for about 30 years. And then I got this platform that was given to me because my wife and I have always been involved with our kids. And my middle son is very into Lego. Just so you know, Lego can never be plural. It's always singular. It's Lego blocks. Just, it's a little thing for people that are listening that are into Lego. So Lego. And I started working with him, and I found this incredible experience that we created between a father and a son. And that led us to be on Lego Masters. It allowed us to be able to be in competition on Fox. It was just an incredible time to be able to show the world what a healthy father-son relationship could look like. And then as I came out of that, that platform that was given to me became a way to be able to start to teach from all of the things that I've been learning for the last 20 or 30 years, so all of the leadership and the team building, the communication. And I found too often we go to conferences, we go to events, we go to workshops, and it's just a talking head and we don't practice. So that's the background. And I found with Lego, what we can do is actually practice in an unconfrontational way, something where all of our guards are down, and we can actually practice and do communication. We can talk about our differences in personality and how they can be healthy. One person looks at it this way and another person looks at it a different way. And then we start to put a competition and put stress around a Lego build, light stress, but put a little bit of stress around the Lego build. And now people can start to understand how you apply theory and strategy in a practical daily life.
So let's dig into that just a little bit. So do you talk first, like in one of these conferences,
yeah,
do you talk about these things first before you build something?
Yes. So
walk me through how that works, because everybody knows what Lego is.
Right.
Whether we do it a little bit or a lot, like I've never had a big set, and I can imagine you've got garages full, but whatever. So,
we literally have about 3 tons of Lego in our basement. I mean, conceptually, we stopped counting. We do it by weight, so we're estimating we have about 3 tons. So let me walk you through this. The very, very first step is, especially when I'm working with an organization, there's not a canned way. Just like you talk about building your life, nobody's life is going to be a canned, set in a box, going to be exactly the same way all the time. So it always starts with a discovery call. What are the needs? Where is it that you're struggling? What are the things that are keeping you up at night? What are you seeing as far as conflict between employees or between staff or between customers? There's all kinds of different things that happen. So the first step has to be a discovery call and really understanding what the need is. Then we take that and craft a short talk around some of the principles through whether, again, I have a master's in leadership, so I can go down all kinds of different paths on theories and strategies, and we can reference almost 6,000 years of history, whether it's personnel. I mean, there's all kinds of incredible information out there. And so we reference that, and we talk about that, and put some bullet points together. Let me just give you an example. We talked about communication with a sales crew.
Okay.
What is effective communication? First of all, we got to define it. What exactly does it mean to have effective communication between the staff, between the customers, between the booking, the reservations, all that? What is effective communication? So we define it. What are the barriers? What are the things that help? What are some, for example, assumptive bias that we step into when we're looking at how we communicate with other people? So that's the beginning part of it. We go through a little bit of lesson. Now, as soon as we get done with that, then we jump into a session where I put together an activity. And typically the activity is going to be anywhere between 2 to 3 hours. I have some shorter ones, but most of them are going to run average about 2 to 3 hours. And then the way it's broken down, and I don't tell them this when I start, but this is how it works, is I give them in 30-minute segments, and I constantly change the rules every 30 minutes. Just like what happens in life. Our things change, economy. Right. Like things change. We can't control a lot of that, so things change. So that's the first thing. The second thing that's most important, though, is what I really look at is the debriefing kind of a time where we're asking questions. How did that make you feel? What were you finding was the most frustrating part of this? Do you have this? Are you using this piece? Remember we talked about assumptive bias? Did you see how that showed up when you were actively doing this? We have a thing called feedback loop. That was in the communication. Did you have effective feedback when there was a conflict in the group? Were you able to?
Now, the thing that they were doing, the it, is building something. So in the half hour segment, they got to go build a thing.
Correct. But it's one. So we put them into groups of three. I found groups of three work best. So we break them up into groups of three. Each individual, and we do this, like I said, about 2 hour, each individual has a chance to be the leader. And I don't want to give away everything, but there's some rules and and you know, like I put boundaries on them to create stress in a non-stressful way. I mean, it sounds weird. It's conflicting, but basically that's what we're doing is we're putting stress on a situation where they are able to be themselves and they're not giving us the.
But the situation is non-threatening, meaning Lego is going to be taken apart and go in a box and go home.
Yeah, they're not going to lose their job if they do it wrong.
Paycheck isn't hanging on it. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So we put that on there, but then I switch out the leaders. So each individual has a chance to be able to do different things. And then at the very end, we take off all the handcuffs and all the boundaries, and then we put it together. And now you have that sense of completion so that the team can actually feel that accomplishment. You set many goals. That's a whole nother talk about prioritizing and goal setting and time management. There's just so many lessons that I could talk about. And again, I don't want to give it all away because there's like some secret sauce in there. So
I'm okay if you keep the secret sauce. We'll talk about where to get some later, but go ahead.
Yeah, so the amazing thing is this, and I remember I go back to the aspect of being a teacher. The one thing that I love to see more than anything, it thrills my soul, is when I see a light come on and I can see a person move from point A to point B. And the stories that come back and the testimonies of, I'll give you an example. The last one I did, we talked about personal development and we talked about personality. So the first session was about personal development. Second session was about personality. One of the main things, and I always ask at the end, what's the one thing you guys are going to take home? What's the one thing you're going to have that you're going to act on? Because they're not going to act on everything. It's impossible. What's the one thing? And the lady looked up at me. She said, when you talked about being grateful, I'm going to practice that every day. I'm going to think of three things that I'm going to be grateful for. And I could already feel, and this is what she said, I can already feel that it's changing my attitude, it's changing my perspective. And I'm going to act on that. And I'm going to do that consistently for the next 30 days. Now, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about that because I know that I'm going to change that person's life just by that little bit of changing her perspective and the focus of where she's at. I just get excited about that.
So that's really good. And your excitement is obvious and contagious. And I love that. You've said a couple things in this introductory part that I want to dig into. So doing these kinds of workshops where you use the experiential processes of non-threatening competition in Lego and so forth to teach principles is what you do for it's work. Mm-hmm. And you get paid to do that, which is wonderful. I want to ask this question a little different because you said you know, bonding with your son and the firm decision you made to be involved in his life and to do that. Yeah, that's a really important thing. And I want to go back to that. What is it about Tim that made him decide that that time with son, daughter, whatever, in this case, it was a son, was important enough to do all that has come from that, which is Legos and competition and, you know, Arctic trips. I don't know, whatever it was, right? Like, what is it in Tim's heart that made that important?
I so greatly appreciate this question because it takes me back to the journey of my life. The story, the narrative that I was living was not my narrative. It was another person's narrative. Definition of success for me as growing up was really, you need to go to school, you need to get a job, or you need to be owning your own business and be successful when you have a lot of money. That was what I believed was going to be the narrative of my life. I'm going to fast forward, skip a whole lot of stuff, but I was working in e-com. It was fourth quarter. Fourth quarter is always the busiest. Also had the pressure of my family, had to go visit back home, visit, you know, my mom and dad and a bunch of stuff. I was physically drained. Mentally, I was just exhausted. Spiritually, I was empty. And emotionally, I was just distraught. I was in tatters. We drive back home after about an 8-9 hour trip from Pennsylvania. The garage door on my home falls down and will not open. And I mentally break. I start beating the crap out of the door. Like literally beating the crap out of the door, WWE, flying elbows, back kicks, whatever. And I'm doing this in front of my family. And I realized at that minute, that moment, that was a time that I realized that that's not the story that I want to leave behind. That's not the narrative that I want to give. So it led me on about a 4-year journey of being able to develop and craft and create the story. And one of those things that was in there was this aspect of shared experiences. And if we do not intentionally share experiences with our kids, then we lose that relationship. And that is the key. So the core of that is I want to leave a legacy, and that legacy is only done in relationship. The legacy is only created when we spend time with those that are most important, because that's how we pass on the most critical aspects, the values that are in our life is through that. So Melissa and I made this commitment that we were going to spend time in what our kids are interested in. For my oldest, it was fishing. For my second, it's Lego. For my daughter, who's my third, God help me, it's going to be shopping and Broadway. And I'm like, we're going to do this. But it's important because, and we watch movies and stuff together with Ellie too, but it's just important to be able to spend time in stuff that they're interested in. Because here's what's happened. When I do that, we often have conversation about weather and things. But then there's this key moment in life, in this time frame. And that key moment goes like this. It's all of a sudden, hey, Dad, what do you think about? And we're dropping off the cliff into the deep end. Hey, Dad, I have this. I have this situation. I don't know how to handle it. I don't know where to go. It's because I spent time and have that relationship that it gives me the opportunity to have those deep conversations with my kids.
So what would you say? I understand that and I love it. And I agree, believe, yes. What would you say to someone who, in the sincerity of their heart, says, I don't have time to do that. I have to work. I have this. I have that. I'm too tired. You know, and they know I love them, you know, that sort of thing. Because the way you're describing it, and I don't know how many hours a week it takes, but the way you're describing means that you pay attention to what they are, what they're thinking, what they want, what they're interested in. You've allowed them to be, you know, who they are and to develop. And then you're participating in that with them as opposed to doing it. So what would you say to someone who frets about the time or the effort or that kind of thing?
You're always going to have time for what you make a priority. You will always have time for that. And I'm going to speak directly. I'm not going to mince words. It's just an excuse. Because I used to live there. And the reason why I can speak so directly is I literally, for about a year, spent a time where I left Monday morning and I was gone all the way until Saturday afternoon because I traveled for work. It's an excuse because I think I have that priority. I think my priority is I have to provide for my family and I have to give them money and I have to give them shelter and I have to, well, yeah, there's responsibilities, but that's not what they remember. And now that my kids are 25 and 22, we go back and we talk about some of the hard times, and we talk about it is better to be poor and spend time with your kids than it is to have the rich house and not never be there. The time with the kids, the time with that, it is so key and so critical. Frankly, and this is the truth of it, is if you believe the opposite of that, you've fallen into that false narrative that our world pushes in regards to everything else is more important than your family. There's nothing greater, no greater calling in life than to be with your family. And let me put it this way. Sorry. It's never too late. If you screwed up like I did for years and years and years, it's okay. It's never too late. Even if you are a dad that's 70, 80, or 90 or whatever, and you want to be able to go back and talk to your 40 or 50-year-old kid, do it. Because they want to have a relationship with you. Now, there's going to be challenges and rough roads, but they want that. Trust me, they want that.
So thank you for finishing that thought, because there's several pieces there, and I want to emphasize some of them. It's better to be poor and have the relationship, because whatever you bought and provided is going to evaporate and disappear, and the relationship is what can last. And so I love that. And the last thing that you added, it's never too late. Mm-hmm. And even if some bridges are burned and some things are closed, persistence and love is what I'm hearing from you. Persistence and love will tap into the wellspring of yearning that they have to create and enjoy the relationship that they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, active listening, that's what we call it when we talk about communication, is as a dad, you have to actively listen what's going on in their life. And it's not just a, hey, how was your day? Oh, it was fine. You know, that doesn't get it done. It's like, really, tell me what's going on. How did you respond to this situation, and watching and seeing, like, what's going on with your friends? And, hey, I saw this happen. Is there something going on there or whatever? And it's really actively being involved in your kids' lives. And that's, again, I come back to this aspect of narrative. I love the idea of crafting and creating, and like you have, ultimate life, building your ultimate life. You have to be intentional with what you're doing. You have to be intentional with where your priorities are. And again, it's never too late to be able to sit and adjust, but sometimes you got to take a good stock and analyze, what the heck are you doing? What are you doing with your time? What are you doing with the amount of energy that you've been given to be able to spend that? And it's going to get, the kids don't remember the money. I'll just be honest with you. They don't remember the money. It's amazing to me how often that happens.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I've got lots of personal experiences about that aren't for this show, because this is about your work. So when you create that time and you have paid real attention and go past the superficial and ask about friends and grades and schools and teachers and, you know, difficult situations. And then it comes to that moment where the real barrier comes down and they say, yeah, there's this thing. And the energy shifts, and you know they're about to say a thing, because, yeah, of course you can feel it, because there's a thing, you know, there's an energetic shift. Mm-hmm. What is that like in the moment? You're a little bit apprehensive because you don't know what it is. You're excited because it means like a real thing. And then what does that mean for you as you think about those kernels of diamonds, literally, that are the foundation of relationship? What does that mean to you now?
I'm not exactly sure the direction of that question. Like, I'm not quite clear on what you're asking me. So I'm going to answer it, and then you adjust me accordingly. Okay. So we'll go that direction. I have four core values. One of them is authenticity, and that's the number one. And then strength, honor, and then adaptability. Those are my four values. Authenticity will trump all of your mistakes, all of your screw-ups, all of the mess-ups, all of the things. When you can authentically be present with your kid. So when they ask you those deep questions and you feel that energy shift and you're like, actually, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. Authenticity gives you the ability to start to be able to create the trust. Now, that doesn't happen without doing the work to create your ultimate life or doing the work to craft your narrative. Like, it does not happen without that work first. But when you're going into that deep end, what that's like, that is them trusting you with a vital piece of information. And it's okay if you don't know. They just want to know that they have somebody there. They want to know that that you can listen to them. They want to know that you're going to be able to walk with them on that journey. And maybe you have to figure it out together. But there's two people now instead of just one. They're not alone.
I love that. And the direction doesn't even matter. So you're fine. I love what made you decide those were your core values? Like, what is the story?
A lot of internal work.
Like what? Like when you banged the so you freaked out and you were working six days a week and never saw anybody and you freaked out and beat the crap out of the door. Then what?
Well, then I had to go back and apologize to my kids and apologize to my wife and apologize and like talk to them in a way that was like, you do not have to. And so there's a difference between honor and respect. As a parent, you have to honor me because of a position, but you don't have to respect my actions. The reactions are there. You, as a child or as somebody following, you don't have to respect those actions. You have to honor me in the position, but you don't have to. And we had a whole conversation about that. I'll give you authenticity. We can talk about some of the others if you want, but authenticity, here's why that's so important to me. When I was a child growing up in a home, I had situations where my mom's emotions would shift very dramatically. And so in those shifting, I never knew really what to expect. I didn't know which mom I was going to have, whether she was coming home or whatever. And so what that did is it created a situation where I learned to be able to read the room very, very fast. By reading the room, I learned how to manipulate the room. I can manipulate situations. I can manipulate motions. I can manipulate all kinds of things. And so I learned very young age, in order to survive, I have to manipulate either the situation or the room, whatever. I have to manipulate it. Now, manipulation is for my benefit. The shift, and the reason why authenticity is so key, is because now if I'm going to be authentic, that means I'm going to influence people for their betterment. So I can still take all of those things. Maybe it was tragic. Maybe it was trauma. I don't care what it was. But I have been gifted with a talent to be able to read situations very, very quickly. Now I have a choice. I can choose to now live authentically and then influence the situation for the betterment either of the group or of the individual, or to get that aha, like, wow, this was the best thing ever. And they become a better individual and they're growing. I have the choice to act and live authentically, do that as an influence. Or, and again, I'm faced with a choice every day. I can go back into manipulation and I can go back into getting and trying to attain success and get what I want. But that's not what life is all about anymore for me. That's the old Tim. The new Tim is living in authenticity and looking to influence for the betterment of another individual.
So I'm glad you said that. And it's not important. I mean, you can tell as much of history as you want or not. But what's important is often when people talk to someone or listen to someone who's done a lot of work, who's elevated their awareness and their desire to do good, so that's a driver in their life, they make an assumption that that person either didn't have difficulties or had it easy, or it wasn't that hard, or, that's good for them, but I couldn't do that. And you made some brief allusions to some difficulties. When you and I talked before, you told me a little about that. And I want to emphasize that the power of transformation comes because of the dichotomy, the difference, the polarity, the difficulties that someone has been through, mm-hmm. to which they make that change. Do you think that's true?
1,000%. 1,000%. I would even say this, and I want to be careful because, again, remember I said about honor and respect, and I want to honor my parents. They did everything that they knew how to do. And they you know, they may even be listening, and I want to respect that aspect of it because they are in that position. But at the same time, we were latchkey kids. You know, back then when we were being raised, it was like, dude, it's all on you. So from a very young age, I had to take responsibility. I didn't really have a childhood. And so you're right. Now, going back to that trauma aspect, I didn't have a chance to have fun. I didn't have a chance to go out and be able to play with the friends as much as somebody else would. And so I had to take care of my brother and my sister. I had to get them up and get them to do this and all kinds of stuff that I had to do. But that gave me a better sense, a better responsibility. It prepared me for this exact moment in life. So now I can look at somebody else and I can say, hey, I'm here to help you. And I can read exactly where they're struggling. And then I can ask deeper questions to get them to open up.
So there's an interesting choice that you made, and I don't know when you made it, but lots of times, in fact, most of the time, things that happen to us, difficult things, they can ruin us or they can refine us. And sometimes they do both. They yes. ruin us first, yep. and then we think about it some more, and we allow it to refine us. So in the level or in the process of, quote, personal work, where did you, because you just said, you know, that prepared me for XYZ, but I know for sure that's not what you were thinking at the time. So what happened to make you switch from ruin or damage in some way to refine? Because that's an important choice Man. That we get and we usually bail on.
Well, we have, you and I talked about this, and I love this whole analogy aspect that you get offered many invitations to make that choice. And so you can make the choice once, but you get offered that invitation again. So I've been offered that invitation many times to make that choice. Some of it is really a matter of shifting the perspective. Sometimes it's the scenario, the circumstances within which we are living forces us to make that choice. A second thing that often happens is we have somebody that steps into our life and directs us as a mentor, as a guide. And I've been honored to be able to have at least 4, 5, 6 individuals that have stepped in and said, hey, I see this going on in your life. What's happening for real? And is that really what you want it to be portrayed as? And that makes you stop and think and come back. And so now I have that opportunity to either listen to that individual whom I respect, or I can choose not to. But again, circumstances, sometimes we're forced in a situation. We moved away from Pennsylvania. This was probably early 2000s or so, moved away from Pennsylvania. So circumstances forced me into a situation where I had to grow. I had to learn. Other times it's been somebody that spoke into my life in just a few words. Say, hey, it's going to be all right. I'm here to walk with you.
I love that. I'm here to walk with you. You said that earlier when you were talking about those precious moments with kids, that they're not alone. And it's not about knowing the answer. It's about having your back or being a companion or being mm-hmm. with you or, you know, being able to depend on that. So there's another version of this question that I want to explore right now. And that is you figured it out for yourself. You know, I can make these choices and I can be better and I can do this. And, you know, the difficult things happen, I'm going to allow them to refine me. And it's one thing to, quote, fix yourself and take advantage of it. Read the room, learn how to do it. At what point did you decide that it was your responsibility, choice, obligation, yearning to serve others like that? I mean, okay, you figured it out for you. And then it's like, okay, wait a minute, that's not enough. Tell me about that.
Can I back up on that question, though? Because I think there's an important thing. You said about fixing yourself. I don't think we do. I don't think we fix ourselves. I think it is a matter of a combination of a few things. Now, do we have the responsibility to act? Absolutely. You are responsible for your actions. And I think that's probably where we get this concept of fixing ourselves, because you have to do the work. You have to act upon what's being done. But my friend Tony Grubmeier, a great individual from Denver, he introduced this concept to me in a way that was, there are blind spots in our lives that we do not know because they're blind spots.
Right.
And until somebody comes along and says, hey, look at this blind spot, how do you know that you're doing something wrong? How do you know that you're in a toxic relationship? Maybe you grew up in that situation and you just don't know that that's the way you act. And that's the toxicity that you've been living in. To you, it seems normal. To you, that's your comfort zone, right? You're just in that section there where you don't know any different. And so you have a choice, though. And this is where the whole fix yourself aspect comes into play, is that you have the choice. You take responsibility once somebody introduces you to your blind spot or shows you that blind spot. Now you have to take that action and do the work to be able to correct that. Now, if you go back in it, then I'm going to blame you. I mean, if you go back into it, a choice that you're going to go back into. But there's so much of my life that I look back and I could have regret. I could have guilt. But it was a blind spot. I didn't know any better. For me, it was survival. I didn't realize it was wrong to act and manipulate. And so I don't have the guilt. I don't carry that guilt because, again, working with Tony as a mentor, and he was able to show and say, this is a blind spot. This is something that you're doing that's hurting other people. This is something that you're doing that's actually stinting your growth and not allowing you to become a better person. Once you know that that blind spot's there, now you can act on it. Now you can actually do something good. So this fixing yourself, yes, you have to take responsibility, but you have to have others helping. You can't, I don't believe that you can do it totally alone. You have to have something else.
I couldn't agree more. And I meant the thrust of the question wasn't about our ability to fix ourselves, because you've articulated that really well, and I agree. I wanted to go to the next step and said, after you had the mentors, the invitations, and the opportunity, and you took action to become more of the person you wanted, I was wondering what it is that made you then decide you were going to be a beacon of light for somebody else instead of just being happy that you got shown and then you got repaired. What's that about? Because that's a lot of work.
I would say at the depth of it, it's a calling. And I believe personally, we are all called to do this. It's part of a human's natural calling to be able to let somebody else grow. It sounds weird, but that's really what it is how do you allow somebody else to grow and flourish, and the give back? There is no greater fulfillment than an individual that lays down his life for another, an individual that's willing to give. There's no greater fulfillment than that. And writing your life story, writing and crafting your story, if you look at all the people, look at Mother Teresa, great inspiration of how she gave her life to be able to help so many others. People that are remembered and have legacy are those that have imprinted on another individual. And we have literally thousands and thousands of years that we can go back into really strong, great leaders. So we can see on a whether it's a spiritual level, religious level, you can see several leaders in that aspect. If we go into the business world, we can see Jim Collins. I can see Ken Blanchard. There's a lot of list of people there. Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. Number one thing, have a humble leader, somebody that's inspiring others, putting others first, giving them the credit for when things go wrong, taking the blame when it goes wrong. Or sorry, giving them the credit when it goes right, taking the blame when it goes wrong. There's just literally literature across history is just full of these incredible examples. And then when I start doing that, and all of a sudden I get the first reply where a guy says, hey, you saved my life because of something that you said. I didn't even remember the conversation with the guy, and I felt so bad. But he comes back to me and says, hey, you literally saved my life. You've changed the trajectory. There's no greater fulfillment in that, because now I can look at that and I can say, I have done something that has impacted an individual to such a level that they completely change their life. And now that one individual is going on and impacting four, five, six, almost a whole company worth of people. I can't express what that feeling is, except for it's the ultimate fulfillment of what we've been looking for.
We are, even our neurotransmitters and stuff, we feel best when we're in love and service. There's no question. And I think there's some kind of spiritual equivalent, whatever that energetic body is inside of us, that has its own, you know, we feel best when we are helping others. People say that all the time. Well, I like helping people. And they haven't really articulated why or whatever, but we feel best about that. So now I want to get to this question. So if you feel like it's a calling, at the lowest, or not the lowest, but the deepest level, what is Tim's calling? What is it that you do because of that calling to add good to the world? That's the phrase that I use to be all that. What do you do?
So I impact people through Lego. That's as simple as I can make it. It's very, very complex in my mind, but I impact people. I help them write their stories through Lego.
So when you say write their stories, tell me a little bit more about that, because I love story. I mean, you know, I've written a lot of books and I help people write books. Right. So what is the story you help them write? And the mechanism doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
You use that. Okay.
Yeah. So again, this is awesome because there's so much depth here. I host a podcast that I invited you were on, and I love the fact that we were able to tell stories, but I host a podcast called Narrative Lot. And what we do specifically in that is we find out what was the false narrative versus what's the true narrative. And we are able to weave and look at different people's stories. The number one lie that I've seen, and this is perpetuated throughout all of social media, a lot of things create diversity in our society, but the number one lie that I see is based on social media's perfectionism, where we always see the highlights, but we never see the lows. We always see the good, but we don't see what's really the struggle going on behind everything.
Right.
And that lie that when it gets going, like mentally, we know that that's not true, but in our hearts, we start to believe that. And we believe everybody else's life is perfect. Mine is not. I've got problems. I've got challenges. And since I am not perfect, I am the only one that's going through this because everybody else's life is perfect. Now, if I ask you that outright, you're like, no, I know that's not true, but we believe it in our core. So writing that narrative really brings out a lot of those false narratives that we've grown up believing, the assumptive bias that we've been cultured into, and looking at those and saying, okay, what is the thing that it's going to take in order for you to write the next thing, write the next part of your legacy? And so when you look at that, how it all fleshes out and writing stories, so my calling is to leave an impact. The way I leave an impact is by creating activity and storytelling. Those two things combined through Lego and narrative. And now you can kind of see how my life is coming back around to be able to give the impact of an individual. Because when we can have activities and do things and craft and write our story for our legacy, that's when we're able to have the ultimate life. That's when we write what our legacy is going to be for the future.
So I love that, and I agree completely. In rewriting, we all hold the pen. Like, we hold the pen, and we live in this assumptive bias that you mentioned and all of the things that have happened to us. I call it a B-deep, which is a context straitjacket, our beliefs, definitions, experiences, expectations, and perceptions. And I like acronyms, so that's a B-deep, and it's a jacket that we wear that limits what we think, a straitjacket that limits what we think we can do. I want you to tell me the one or two examples that come up for you that in the process of you helping someone identify and rewrite their story through the exercises and work that you've done that has really touched you with what they have been able to change.
So immediately things come to mind, and I want to be conscientious of the fact that as I coach and talk and train and teach, there are individuals that I can't share their stories. So I have to mentally, immediately I've got stories and I'm like, oh, I can't tell that one. Oh, I can't tell that one. So I'm just like,
tell whatever you can. Change the names, something. Exactly. Right.
There's definitely individuals, and I'll go back to this one individual that told me I changed his life. It was actually 2 years after the conversation. I don't recall exactly what the conversation was at that time, but I do recall specifically talking about, and I've heard it called different things, drainers and drivers or boosters and zappers. It's a couple different ways that I've seen people approach this. And literally what you're doing is you take a one sheet of paper, you split it down the middle. On one side, it's all the drainers, and on the other side, it's all the drivers. What that means is, what are the things that are draining your energy that you do every day? What are the things that you're doing that drive your energy every day? The reality is we're never going to get rid of everything. So maybe answering emails is a drainer for you, but that's part of your job and you got to do it. You got to do it, right? So that's part of it. But you have drivers on the other side. Here's the key. The driver's list needs to be longer than the drainer's list. And when I've done this with different individuals, the aha moment comes when they're telling me at the very beginning of the whole session, I am exhausted. I don't think I can keep going. I don't know how I'm going to make it through this life. I'm really thinking about quitting or running away. I'm just done. Like, if you hear somebody say, I'm
set up for a midlife crisis is what I'm hearing.
You are completely, that's an anxiety, critical breakdown kind of a thing. And typically, and again, this is just one exercise that we do in some of our training programs, but it's the drainers and the drivers. And typically, I can tell you almost every time verbatim is their list of drainers is 10 times longer than their list of drivers. They have opted. So let's go back to the beginning of what you had said. Like, I have a priority. I have to make money. I've got to be away from my family. I've got to. And the list goes on for a mile. They are now setting the priority of their business, their job, their responsibilities, whatever those things are. And it's draining their energy, their mental focus, their physical, their emotional and spiritual, just like it did for me, where you're on the path to a physical breakdown, a mental breakdown, an anxiety disorder. There's all kinds of things. You have got to get your life in an order where you're flipping and taking some of those drainers. And there's a thing the do, delegate, or delete. Get rid of them, delete them if you can, delegate them if you can. Some of them you have to do on the drainers part of it. The driver side, find things that give you energy. And this is going to be based on your personality. If you're an introvert, things that give you energy may be hiding away by yourself, reading a book. If you're an extrovert, it might be going out and playing pickleball. I don't know if you're a pickleball player or not, but going out and doing activities in community, right? So yeah. There's, you got to find things that are going to give you the energy, restore that energy, just kind of heal you in a matter of that part of it. So that one exercise, like I said, going back to this, when I hear somebody say that I'm done, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, that exercise alone changes the trajectory of where they're at. And slowly they can start building that energy back. And they can come now back and say, man, this is just, I'm excited to get up. I'm excited to be part of this life. I'm excited to be actually involved with my kids or my business or my job. And that vibrance for life comes back because now they've got the energy to face what is coming down the road.
So I love that. And it's clear from just listening to you, the energy and your passion and everything is contagious. And I love that. And I love having guests just exactly like you that are living that kind of passion and energy. What do you do to so that you are this committed and energized? Because I've talked to you, you know, two or three times. I know you. So tell me what you do. Because so many people get up each day, like, I don't know why God made us to die every night and wake up every morning, yep, recreate ourselves, but he did. Okay, what do you do to create yourself as the passionate, committed, involved, caring person that you are?
I love this question, and I'm going to answer it in a way that's going to break most people's brains.
Please do.
I hate consistency. I am not a consistent person. I don't know if anybody's read Miracle Morning, but that's one of the things that I read, and I love the guy, I love the book, but I'm not that guy. So okay, when it comes to consistency, like, people have a pattern. They get up at 5 a.m. The next 10 minutes, they're doing this. The next 15 minutes, they're doing this, whatever. They have this pattern that they do. My personality is such that I am freaking all over the place. I don't know. I never was diagnosed with ADHD or whatever, but I enjoy chaos. I enjoy change. I love living to that. However, there's some key elements that I have to have involved. So I have to understand where I'm at. In other words, I have to have emotional intelligence to know where my exhaustion levels are. That comes from doing some of the drainers and drivers. And when I recognize that I'm getting exhausted, I have to go back and I have to make sure that I'm increasing the amount of drivers that I'm doing, the amount of things that are going to give me energy. So, for example, and I'll just give you the last week. We left Thursday. We left Thursday to drive down to Atlanta, 14-hour trip in the car.
Well, and you're leaving from where now?
Are you leaving from Michigan,
okay.
Driving down to Atlanta, Georgia, 14 mm-hmm. hours in the car. Get down there Friday. I have a meeting Friday morning with a business partner. Great meeting, just phenomenal. Actually went long. It was 2.5 hours. It was awesome. But then I go directly from that, because I had to get up early for that meeting, go directly from that into setting up for the show that was going to be on Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, we tear down. So we start driving back, and we only got about 2 hours in. That means we're driving 12 hours or so on Monday. Jumping into Tuesday, I was supposed to have an off day. That didn't happen because Wednesday was going to be all snowy. I wasn't going to be able to get out for my next appointment. Ended up within 30 minutes, I changed my flight and left the house to be able to go get on a flight to go to New Jersey. Wednesday, I'm still doing my training. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I fly back. 9 days? 8 days. 8 days. I come back on Friday, and my energy level is bottom out. I knew I had to take Saturday and Sunday to be able to recharge. And I literally didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to see anybody. I just had to take that quiet time. In that quiet time, here's a couple of key elements. One, absolutely have to journal. Now, I may not have time every day. I try to, but I may not have time every day to journal and write down my thoughts. Writing them down slows my brain. It allows me to process all of the stuff that just happened. That's one of the key elements. Number two is listening to something that's motivational. And so I always try to include that, making sure that I've got some motivational. And then I also, in the journaling aspect, there's a couple of key things. One of the key elements, what are the good things that are going on? Looking for the positive, looking for the things that I'm grateful for. And so I do that. So if I were to be honest and say I do this every day, I mean, like, I don't. But I do intentionally set that time aside because I can't do it every day. But I have to have these pieces in my life. I have to be able to be connected with my family. I have to be able to spend time with my kids. I have to be able to hear them, the voices on their phone. I have to be able to journal and work on that. I have to have some time for reading, for educational side of things. So I have to build that in, but I'm not a 9-to-5-er. I'm not a get up at 5 a.m. and do this. We play pickleball in the morning, and usually it's Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. But some days it's Monday. Some weeks it's Monday and Friday. Some days it's Tuesdays and Friday. I mean, like, it's all over the place. But it's my community. I get to go out and hang out with a bunch of guys, and I absolutely love that. So it's all over the place, but those are the key elements I have to have in mind.
And I would say it's not all over the place at all, because you've described physical elements. You've described mental elements that stimulate your mind. You've described emotional elements, which is the relationships with your family. So you've got physical, you've got mental, you've got emotional, and you've got spiritual elements, because you've referred several times to the spiritual nature of things, which means whether it's prayer or meditation or scriptures or other sacred literature. So you cover those things
every
time. The whole explanation that you gave simply means I don't do it exactly the same all the time because the other stuff that I do is a little chaotic, but I still cover those things. And I've developed the sense that I know when I need recharging, and then I go get it done.
Absolutely. That, and you hit the nail on the head with that, because that's the four key areas of growth, is the physical, mental, spiritual, and social. Those four areas, absolutely, every time. And when I do talks about personal, this is those four areas I have to cover. And you hit the nail on the head, because I have actually a chart, and it's like, okay, did I do this? Did I do this? Am I fulfilling that specific area? Am I refilling that energy bucket?
Okay, good. Because I, you know, I do have a morning ritual, and I do it every day, and I never skip. But whether you do it every day, I mean, Covey and Seven Habits of Highly Effective People talked about planning on a weekly basis, because often you can't do everything every day.
Right.
So your description, I just didn't want to leave it in chaos, because it didn't sound like chaos to me.
Oh, see, I feel like it's chaos, but I live in chaos. I love chaos. I'm good with it.
All right. Well, I'm okay if you live in chaos. All right. So we just have a few minutes left, and I want to open this to what didn't I ask you that you would like to teach us or share with us that you just want to make sure we know about our own opportunities, your work, or anything like that?
I would say this question here, I love this question, but I also like to be able to respond with questions, because I have found in regards to this component is, where is your need? What are you looking for? Because when I hear people's needs, then I can actually be more attuned to be able to answer that question accurately. And here's what I mean. I talk with an individual, he's 22 years old. His need right now, if I were to say to him and talk directly to him, is to let him know that he's not alone and he needs to build relationships. He has to have a community. There's a really great book. It's called Bowling Alone. Look it up. We don't have time to go into it, but it talks about how critical community is in our society and how we've gone away from it. If you're somebody my age at 50, 60, you're getting into the, look for people to mentor. Don't be afraid of that. That is absolutely key, because those younger guys, I see them all over the place. They're raising their hand. They're saying, hey, I want somebody in my life. I want a guide, somebody that I can talk to be able to go through that. And there's so much more in that. I mean, we could talk literally for another hour about all the awesome experiences and stories. At the end of the day, there's two things. One, Lego workshops are the key. Activity is the key in learning. And that's why I do Lego workshops. Two, with narrative.live, we train people on how to be able to write stories. I know you do that with your Ultimate Life as well, but we have a course that we started, 6 weeks. We walk them through. It literally is the beginning foundations of crafting your narrative and crafting your life. It's not going to complete.
I want to make sure that they have those websites or something. Where do they go to find those things?
So narrative.live is going to be the one spot to find all of our podcasts, where we talk about stories, where we actually post about our events and things that are going on. Because again,
narrative.live. Good. Yeah, what else?
No. And then I post on LinkedIn more than I post on my website. Now, you can go to timkroll.com and find stuff there about me. But frankly, especially businesses and corporations, which are my target, LinkedIn is where I put all of my content for Lego workshops. And you'll see videos, you'll see I have a newsletter on LinkedIn. I've got literally my entire life is on LinkedIn because it's a trusted website that it doesn't get flagged by EDU type emails or any of the corporate. Right. It doesn't get flagged. So I use LinkedIn primarily because it's a trusted website. So if you want to find out about Lego workshops, you can go there. That will be our home point, and then we can build out from there.
Tim, I want to thank you for...
Is our hour over already? What?
It is. I want to thank you for your passion, for your heart, for your love, for your commitment, for the choices that you made to change, the choices that you made to grow, and the choices you're continuing to make to lift and bless people with their story, with their stories, their narratives, and all the rest. Thank you.
Wow, oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk and share. I do want to say, don't be afraid to reach out to me. I will respond to everybody's message. Everybody, whether you send me an email at tim@timkroll.com or you send me through LinkedIn, I will respond to everybody's messages.
Thank you. And I want to encourage the listeners, please take the time to check out Tim. He's the real deal. Like, I was on his show and we had a chance to chat for some good time before that. His story is amazing. His life is powerful. His intention is pure. His desire to serve is real. And he is everything he seems to be. And that energy that you're sensing and his passion is powerful. It's upfront and it's pure. So if you want help writing your narrative, understanding how to rewrite it, growing things in your company and your own life, please take the opportunity to check him out, because he will be an element to help you create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.